Welcome to the Steep Angle Podcast, the podcast fueled by a life of powdered slopes, ripping good single tracks, healthy living, and the tools and people that help us along the way. Energized by motion, exploration, and the celebration of life, we hope you find inspiration in what we share. Be courageous, be curious, and chase your adventure. I'm your host, Daniel, and this is Steep Angle. Hi, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Today is Thursday, February 18th, 2021, and we're just one day away from an exciting weekend. This weekend, Arizona Snowbowl will be the site of the USSA Southern Series Slalom Race, where many athletes of all ages from the Flagstaff Alpine Ski Team will be racing. Good luck to all the athletes competing, and in the words of famous pro basketball player Wilt Chamberlain, and I quote, "We make too much of winning. The mere fact of winning doesn't make you great." End quote. Winning is the result of many failures, with a dusting of perseverance, and losing is an opportunity to grow with a dusting of determination. So win or lose, just give it your all so that if you do win, you can do so with grace, and if you lose, you can hold your head high knowing you gave it your best and you left it all on the slopes. So go out there and have fun. In local news, Arizona Snowbowl received 15 inches of new snow, bringing the season total to a whopping 127 inches. And just as predicted, the Hike 2 trails on the Upper Bowl are open for business. I dragged my son up to Upper White Lightning for the first time, and boy was it good. I mean, epic blower pow good. Both my son and I, along with our buddies Dominic and his son Philip, we're just drinking it in. In the words of Robin Williams from the Dead Poets Society, we were sucking out the marrow of life. Tree runs at higher elevations like Upper Gully and Lower White Lightning were pretty epic too. So epic that my son and I went back the following day with our pals and rippy good skiers, Kyle and his daughter Reese, and with as many tracks in those higher tree runs as there were, it was still pretty darn good. If you don't mind tight trees, you could probably still find some untracked powder, but you'll probably be playing defensive tackle with the trees rather than skiing. Backcountry seems to have shaped up nicely in the Inner Basin, and by the looks of the peaks from my house, runs like Allison Clay and Dutchman are showing signs of promise. Latest avalanche problems consist of persistent slab, being one of the larger avalanche problems on many aspects near and above treeline. Wind slabs are also a problem, with high southwest winds this past Saturday, followed by northwest winds on Sunday, as well as high north and northwest winds today, so be sure to look for wind-loaded areas and possibly some cross-loading. I was up there this morning for the early morning uphill grind, and boy was it windy. Lots of snow was pushed around, so definitely look for signs of wind slab. For updates on backcountry conditions on the Kachina Peaks, be sure to visit www.kachinapeaks.org. That's kachinapeaks.org. Get the latest forecast, know before you go, and travel safely. Well, enough of the local updates. My guest today is Charlie Boyer. Charlie is one of the talented coaches for the Flagstaff Alpine Ski Team, and we get into all kinds of topics, from her early years on the team as an athlete to overcoming injuries. Now, in my attempt of being respectful of COVID protocols and such, this episode was done over a Zoom call, which made things a little spotty because of minor internet connection issues. But overall, things worked out quite well, so enough of me talking. Please welcome Charlie Boyer.
Dropping.
Hi.
Can you see me?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I don't have a great service. I think it's going to be great fine today, but just letting you know.
Okay. Well, we'll deal with those issues as they come up.
Cool.
So welcome and thanks for joining. I have many, many questions. So if you're ready, we're just going to drop right in.
Cool. Sounds great.
All right, so I'm just going to start off with, tell me about the Blonde Book.
Oh gosh. That's where we're going to start. Okay. I guess Elizabeth told you about that. Yeah. That was a ski team blonde book. We started that. I don't even know when that started, but a little journal of all our adventures, ski racing, and kind of the funny moments we had in town and also on the road. So we've got some good stuff in there. I don't know if most people would understand if you just read it, but lots of good funny stuff for sure.
So what were some of those funny moments?
Oh gosh. Well, Elizabeth and I, we had a lot of inside jokes on ski team along with a lot of the other kids on ski team, but kind of just funny things, missing gates or having funny stories of just not, I don't know. It was all silly. Now looking back, I don't really know. We really, our coaches loved it as much as we did, but but yeah, it was always a joke that we were the blonde book because we always made stupid comments. So that was that.
Might make for a good coffee table book someday.
Exactly. I think Elizabeth actually has it somewhere right now. So
oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you, like Davis, were born and raised here in Flagstaff. So I imagine you started skiing at very early age. Can you speak mm-hmm. to some of those early memories?
Yeah, so, you know, my parents got us involved in skiing really early on. My mom would take us up in the backpack, and then she would actually use a dog leash to put underneath our arms and ski with us between our legs. And that's how we learned how to ski up at Snowbowl. That was a lot of fun. Davis and I are a lot closer in age. I have two other brothers that are also grew up on ski team and have coached as well. So it was just a really fun family time. And, you know, Snowbowl is a good family, small family resort. It's definitely grown, but, you know, it was a lot of fun growing up on the mountain, kind of getting to go all over and really just a little local mountain. So that was a lot of fun.
How old were you when you were first put on skis?
Oh gosh. You know, I don't know. I think maybe around two. We were up there. I don't know when I actually skied, but was in the backpack with my mom. Both her and my dad were very avid skiers. So we were up there a lot.
Very cool. So now when you talk about those early years, you mention about counting down the days until ski season. What if any were some of those rituals of that countdown? Like, for example, my son and I, when we're approaching ski season, it's like, all right, let's get the stoke factor up and start watching ski films and, you know, that sort
of thing. That's awesome. Yeah, I think the same, similar, you know, we always had the ski swap every year before ski season started. And that was the ski team was super involved with that. And so it was just fun to see everybody preseason and, you know, just getting excited for snow to come. And obviously we had some years that it was definitely dry seasons. And so I think there was always that, you know, wishful thinking, what kind of year is this going to be here in Flagstaff? And obviously there wasn't snowmaking at the time. So, you know, just wishing for some snow from Mother Nature there.
Yeah, so. Do the usual, you know, pour ice cubes in the toilet and that sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, exactly. do you guys do that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Wear pajamas inside out.
Pajamas inside out. Yeah, exactly. Do a little snow dance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So now at what age did you start with the team?
You know, I think I was around 7 or 8. I got started a little bit later. I was definitely you know, my dad he was on ski team when he was younger because he's actually from Flagstaff as well. And so I remember them asking if I wanted to ski team. I'm definitely, it was hard for me to start ski team. I definitely was very attached to my parents and didn't really know if I was going to love it. And so when I started ski team, it was awesome. You know, and I think that it's still that way today. It's just a very welcoming team. And I was definitely, you know, I didn't know everyone on ski team when I started, and it's kind of scary doing something new. And so I think that ski team really, it just welcomes you in, and I felt right at home right away, and I loved it and never looked back. So.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that about the team, that it's very inviting and very, very welcoming to both athletes and parents, very much so. Now, when you started with ski team, did you realize right away that you were part of something bigger than yourself, or did that evolve over time with the team? Like, was it an immediate thing, or was that something that developed over time?
Yeah, no, I think definitely over time. I think when we're, you know, when we're younger, we don't necessarily recognize it as much. Now, looking back, I think that I feel so grateful for that opportunity to be able to be up on the mountain and to be with, surrounded by really awesome, amazing people and families and coaches. And, you know, I do remember when I was younger, it was always a goal to be on Brian Beamer's team. It was like, when you got to Brian's team, that was, you were in, like, that was what everyone wanted to be on Brian's team. So it was kind of funny that you had, you know, when you were younger, what you thought about versus now looking back. But yeah, I think over time, those relationships were built. Some of them obviously we had before ski team, but those relationships still today are some of my closest friends. So that's been awesome.
Yeah. So when you made it on Brian's team, that's when you knew you arrived.
Yeah.
I made it.
It's kind of, yeah. It was just that we're here. We did it.
Now, let me ask you this. When you did make it onto Brian's team, was that when things got more serious? Not that it stopped being fun, but just things started to get a little bit more serious, more competitive. And if so, what were some of the kind of personal goals that you would set for yourself during those, okay, I'm competing, I'm serious about it now. Like, during that time, can you speak to some of the goals that you had laid out for yourself?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that I've always been competitive. And since I was the oldest in my family, I think it was kind of funny because I was definitely more competitive than, well, Davis probably won't like me saying this, but he's a pretty easygoing guy. He's not very competitive. My younger brother Keegan is in between, or he's right after Davis. He's very competitive as well. So I think that as I probably didn't get as involved in the competitive aspect probably until like around middle school, and started traveling a lot more. And I don't think that I definitely after that point got really serious. Like, ski racing was my life for that time. I had a whole collage in my room on like bilateral walls of just like Bodie Miller pictures taped all over everything. And so I think that it was really ski racing was my whole life at the time. My dad was super involved in skiing. He went with us. My mom did too, but my dad was more involved in the race aspect of everything. And so it was just a, you know, fun family thing, but I think I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself, especially coming into high school. And then I qualified for Junior Olympics, and I actually tore my ACL right before I went to JO. So that was a really hard thing for me at the time. And then I came back to racing, and I raced till my freshman year of college, and I tore my ACL fully again. So I think that, I was definitely very committed during that time period.
So during that time, was it mostly, like, if I were to go back in time and talk to the past younger you, and asked you, you know, what does your competitive horizon look like? Was it always just about JOs, or were you looking beyond that?
You know, I think I thought I was going to race in college. That was the plan. Again, I'm very much a homebody. I went to NAU. I did not leave my freshman year of college. And my dad at the time, you know, I was really the oldest person racing at that time. I think as ski racing goes on, you know, people move on to different things. It's hard to stay in the sport. And so I was traveling with my dad to FIS races. He was my coach. And it was just me and him, which was great, but I think it was the social aspect of it wasn't there as much. And it's hard being from Flagstaff and traveling and going to these races, you know? And so I think that at that point when I tore my ACL, my freshman year of college, it was kind of, you know, I thought I still love skiing and ski racing, but I think that it's, you know, I don't really want to pursue anything more in that aspect, competitive aspect anyways.
Yeah. But you definitely think you're more competitive than Davis.
Oh, yes. 100%. And he'll tell you that for sure. Yeah. My dad would always give him such a hard time. He was a great skier, but it was funny. He'd be going down the course and my dad would be like, Davis, were you going for a little walk in the park? You know, he just, there wasn't a lot of, he just had a lot of fun.
Yeah. So let me ask it this way. If it's you and Davis at the top of the run, who makes it down first?
You know, Davis probably actually, he for sure 100% would beat me. He's an awesome skier. I think when he was ski racing, it was kind of just, that's his personality. Like, everything's fine. Everything will be okay. Keegan for sure would beat me, and probably my younger brother, Blake, too. So, but I'm okay with that.
So your competitive years, they carried on until, from what I've read, they've carried on until you were 18 when you blew your ACL for the second time. Mm-hmm. When was the first time and how did it happen?
Yeah. So, I qualified for JOs in what year? That was my freshman year of high school. And I think myself and one other athlete on the team, we qualified at that year. And we had gone to a race in Durango, the week before JOs was supposed to happen. And I actually, caught my ski on a gate and my din on my binding was set higher than it probably should have been. And my ski didn't release. So I partially tore my ACL at that time, and did rehab and didn't get surgery that time. And then continued skiing for 4 more years after that before I fully tore it.
And how was the recovery experience from that?
You know, it was great. I did physical therapy pretty intensely after that first time just to try and heal it because it was only partially torn. And I was bummed that I didn't go to JOs, but, you know, I think that it's interesting because Flagstaff, you know, you don't think a lot. JOs is kind of, especially up in Colorado, it's just expected that you qualify because I think that that's just the caliber and the level. And in Flagstaff, it's kind of a bigger deal. Not that we have amazing skiers. It's just a big deal when you from Arizona, because I think it's, you know, people are like, oh, you know, they're skiing in Arizona, that kind of thing. And so I think it's a really huge accomplishment. And for our kids, when they qualify for, now they call it championships, I think, but when they qualify for that, it is a really big deal and it's really awesome. And so I think that when you're at that age, it's really heartbreaking to not be able to go and do that kind of stuff. So that for me was hard to get over, but I got back into skiing and continued racing. So
now, how much did that first incident affect your, I guess, competitiveness? Like, did you find yourself having trouble like stepping on the throttle?
Yes and no. I think it was, when I continued ski racing, I still was doing, you know, well, I was pretty hard on myself as far as, you know, if I didn't do well, I think I was very frustrated and, there was tears shed for sure. but I know my dad really kept reminding me that, you know, we're doing this is supposed to be fun. And this is what that's about, you know, and yes, I know you want to do well. And I know you put a lot of pressure on yourself to do well, but ultimately, you know, this is a fun thing. And you know, you get so many life experiences from ski racing. And I think that, now looking back, it just makes, I'm just very grateful for that opportunity.
Now, did you find that putting that pressure on yourself kind of was counterproductive to your performance in some cases?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Yeah. I think, like I said, it's hard going up to the races and especially the bigger ones. And then when I got into racing some of the fist races, you know, there's a lot of really, really talented athletes. And I think that it's hard when you're from Flagstaff because you just have this mentality that, you know, you're not necessarily getting as much of the training as they are, or, you know, you just have all these things that you run through your head, and it may not be true, but I think that you sometimes feel like a little bit of an outsider going up there, because a lot of times as it gets more competitive, the kids that are still racing from Colorado and everything, they still have a lot of the teammates involved because they're still racing at the competitive level. And so I think that was for me the reason I think I quit after I tore my ACL the second time. It just wasn't as fun for me, the racing side of things.
So how did that happen the second time?
I was just training up at Snowball, and it was a pretty soft, slushy day, and just kind of got in a rut and tweaked my leg the wrong direction. And then that time I did fully tear that, which probably was going to happen just because it was a partial tear the first time. So, and I had surgery that second time.
Now that's the incident that basically stopped you from competitive racing. Was the recovery from that kind of one of those things where, boy, just the climb back to getting to that peak performance that I was at, that's just too much of a climb. And is that kind of how it went?
Yeah. Yes and no. I think I wasn't going to school, and I was in college at the time, and I think there's just different life things going on. And, you know, I still love skiing. I didn't love necessarily racing. I think I was a little burned out on the racing side of things. And so I think it was a good time to just step away from racing. And I took a couple years off of being involved with the race program, and then ended up coming back and coaching later on. And I think that was a really good reset, because I think you know, my coach, Matt McIntyre, he was awesome. He's an awesome guy, but he, you know, had told me the same thing, that when he got to that level, he was kind of like, I just was so burned out. And he was like, I stepped away, and then he went back and coached and loved ski racing again. It was just a good reset for me personally.
Yeah. So when you stepped away from racing, it sounds like there wasn't much of a sting to it from stepping away, or was there? Like, did it sting a little bit at all that, okay, I'm not going to be this thing that was my life, I'm not going to be doing anymore?
Yeah, I think it was fine. I was bummed that I obviously blew out my knee again, but I think that I was very focused on school. I thought I wanted to go to med school, and so that was kind of where my focus was at the time. And so skiing was, you know, fun still, but I didn't ski as much those next couple of years, kind of just stepped away from it altogether. And so yes and no, it was hard, but I think that, again, there was a lot of other things that I was focused on, so it wasn't very terribly hard.
So now, going through that experience of, you know, going through injuries during your competitive years, and now that you're a coach, looking back at that, what would you tell the really competitive athletes that do get injured? You know, the ones that you do coach, what would you tell them to kind of help them get through something like that, and, you know, not be so bummed about it, but to kind of let them know, hey, you know, yes, it happened, you'll get through this. What kind of, I guess, little bite-sized morsel of information from your experience would you share with them?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I think we're at that point when we get injured, it's such a big thing at the moment. And it's so overwhelming to, you know, you're very frustrated, and there's all the emotions of hurting yourself, and, you know, you're discouraged. And I think that for my kids, you know, telling them that, yes, this is a big deal right now, and it seems like it's a huge issue, but, you know, this right now is not going to define you later. And I think that we have so many little road bumps and things in our life and continue to come, you know, and we have to overcome those. And I think that, you know, just try and keep moving forward, and, you know, it's really not a big deal in the big picture. Again, I've had some other life things in life that have happened since then. And I think that looking back at injury, to me, it's not, you know, that wasn't a life defining moment for me. And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of other things that actually matter in the big picture. And getting hurt, yes, it's frustrating, but you can come back from that.
Yeah. Now, if you didn't have any of those injuries, do you feel like your racing career would have endured a little bit more?
Yeah, possibly. Again, like when I was the second time, I think that I tore my ACL, I was done with ski racing. I think I was just pretty done because, like I said, I had gone my last race out of town. I had gone with my dad up to Eldora, and it was a fifth slalom race, and it just wasn't as fun for me anymore. I think I wasn't at the level that everyone else was. I was skiing, you know, okay, but mentally I was kind of just not focused. And so I think that either way, I don't think I would have continued if I wouldn't have hurt myself anyways.
Yeah, that seems to be a common theme with a lot of athletics, that the moment it stops being fun is mm-hmm. the moment that it is a defining moment in terms of whether or not you continue to pursue it. I could definitely relate to that. So you stopped racing and you kind of stepped away from skiing for a little bit. What did you do during that time? Like, you mentioned school.
Yeah, I did school. I met my husband during that time. I was at NAU. And then, you know, yeah, I think we have a lot of other, you know, we do camping and skiing, water skiing and biking and hiking and all the fun things. So, did a lot of that during that time. And then I think it was my junior year of college was when I started coaching. So I think I've been coaching, this is my 11th season with the team as a coach. So that's where I'm at now.
Now, how did you find that transition from, you know, being an ex-athlete and then kind of progressing into and developing as a coach?
Yeah, that's challenging for sure. I started out with the really little ones when I started coaching. I did the 5 and 6 year old. And that in itself is a huge challenge. It's not so much the technical side of skiing, but just, you know, kind of how to get all the kids down the mountain.
Yeah, it's herding then, cats.
Exactly. And then just kind of, you know, I think figuring out ways to just kind of balance, you know, some of them are having to go to the bathroom and then want to, you know, so I think just trying to kind of balance that. Luckily, I had Kim Lundstrom. She actually was the director of our program for a long time. She and I coached together. She had come back to Flagstaff that year, so her and I had coached together. We had a lot of fun. And then I think maybe a couple years later, or maybe the next year, we did a level 100 coaching clinic up in Colorado, which we learned a lot of, you know, drills and kind of just techniques for coaching. And that was super helpful. USSA does do some really great programs for coaches. And so the logistics sometimes are hard to do as far as getting up to Colorado and actually getting to a clinic, but there's a lot of options. And Davis and I did a level 200 clinic and did a course setting clinic. And so there's a lot of things, I think, that as far as the education side of things that were really helpful initially starting. But yeah, I think just, I started coaching, I don't know how long after I started coaching travel team, but that was a different game just because it's more of the technical side of things and actually, you know, getting down to smaller details and trying to figure out how to coach different kids who have different learning ways of learning and how to portray that to each individual kid is definitely, it's fun, but it takes a little time to figure out for sure.
Yeah.
And I still am sometimes questioning, you know, that.
So you, even
but
as
you're always learning. That's the thing. Like, you know, I think that every year I've been coaching for a while, but it's still constantly learning and trying to figure out how best to each year, you know, teach each kid and try and be a good coach.
Yeah. And now what, I guess, what goes on in those clinics? So you mentioned there's a level 100 and a level 200. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the two? I mean, obviously I would imagine the level 200 is kind of more advanced, but
yeah.
Like, what are some of the things that they teach in those clinics that is teaching coaches, not teaching athletes?
So the level 100 was more so, they gave us we did a lot of drills and learning different ways to kind of, we did the drills ourselves, actually. They would have us do the drills and then they would actually coach us. And then we had actually classroom time off the hill where they gave us a lot of, I would say that was more like the fundamentals of skiing, ski racing specifically, you know, turn shape. There was kind of just balance, all the different things. The US ski team has the different progressions that they drill into all their, I guess, all of their clinics, but that was kind of the progression of skiing was what the level 100 was. And then the level 200, we did some more of the, you know, progressions of skiing, but it was more so focused on course setting and that racing aspect. And we had 2 days where we actually went up on the hill and set courses and worked with some of the US ski team people up there and did that. So that was pretty cool. And then there's a level 300, which I have not done, but that one, once you get your level 300, you can teach the level 100 and 200. So we're hoping to get somebody that will have their level 300 that can kind of start doing some clinics down in Flagstaff so we can get some more of our coaches in the level 100, which would be awesome.
So Davis, if you're listening, take your level 300.
Yeah, I think Jeff has his level 200. So I think Jeff Schultz is going to hopefully get his level 300 and he can start doing that. So that'll be good.
So it's a lot of coaching the coaches type of thing when you're doing these clinics. Now, can you speak to some of the successes you feel you've had as you've developed as a coach?
Yeah, I think that, you know, over the years, I think my one goal as a coach, as far as how I would define myself as being successful, is just that, again, going back to the kids having a good time and having fun and looking at ski racing in a positive way. I think that that's ultimately why we're up there. Yes, you know, it's great when the kids do well and the results are, you know, good, or they feel proud of what they did. I think that that's the competitive aspect is also a big part of it, but again, not for every kid. And I think that, you know, when the fun's not there, then what's the point of, you know, what are we here for? And ultimately I think that it's to have a good time and to be up there with each other and to be on the mountain. And, that is really awesome.
So would you say that, as long as your athletes that you coach are having fun and having a good time, then you've done your job?
Yeah, I think too. And I think ski racing, you learn so many different, you know, life skills. There's, you know, I think respect is a huge one. There's respect for, you know, the kids you're racing with, your peers. There's respect for your coaches, and then there's the respect for the mountain in general. I think that there's not really any other sport like ski racing. You can be up on the mountain and, you know, you have all this freedom, really, as far as, you know, you really learn to appreciate the mountain and that you get to be up there. And so I think that's a huge part of it. And I think it's, you know, the kids learn to be, you know, responsible as far as, you know, we're up there on the mountain and we always tell the kids, you know, you guys, everyone's kind of looking at you to be role models for the mountain, you know, and you guys are amazing skiers and, you know, people are looking at you. And so you have to, you know, be responsible in that aspect as well. And then, you know, there's a lot of variables on the mountain as far as, you know, changing weather conditions and being on the chairlift and all these things that the kids have to learn how to be kind of responsible, but at the same time have a good time, you know. But there are a lot of risks in ski racing, so I think that that teaches them that as well. So
now you mentioned the, you know, a lot of life lessons in being part of the team and skiing. Can you speak to how being part of the ski team has kind of impacted other aspects of your life, you know, kind of speaking to how those life lessons kind of bleed into other areas of your life? Can you speak to some of that?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I think resilience is a huge thing as far as skiing. You know, you have all the different variables as far as changing weather conditions, and it can be cold, and, you know, the kids are in race suits. It's snowing and it's cold, and, you know, that's tough. That's challenging. And I think that, you know, we kind of take that for granted, like, oh, it's, you know, ski racing. But I think that being up there on the mountain and being able to look inside yourself and be okay with, you know, being really cold and keep going. And, you know, I think the cool thing about ski racing is there's so many disciplines. You have, you know, slalom all the way to downhill. And some kids might be good at slalom, not as great at GS, you know, or might be better at GS and not as great at downhill. But there's an opportunity for everyone kind of to, you know, excel in some aspect of that. And I think that's, you know, that's life. We're not going to be good at everything we do. You know, there's certain things you're better at and you're not as good at, you know. And so I think that that ties back to ski racing. And I think that for as far as my life personally with skiing, it's just, like I said, it's a family up on the mountain. And I think that that really is what keeps bringing everyone back every year, is really that bond that everyone has with, you know, athletes and coaches and parents and families. So I think that's a huge part of the ski team. And I think at Flagstaff special because it is a smaller area. And so I think that we have that really a lot of closeness on the team, which is really cool.
But in terms of, I guess, in terms of the life lesson things, I guess one of the key takeaways is, you know, resilience, perseverance, that type of thing that, yes, they become very useful in other aspects of your life. Whether it's, you know, going to school or working on a project for work or something like that.
Yeah.
Do you also feel that maybe you're better at internalizing things than, say, people that weren't athletes? Because the way I think about that is, you know, growing up as an athlete, you have many, many years of constantly being told what you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of internalize that and, you know, say, okay, well, you know, I need to improve that. Do you feel that that's another aspect of a life lesson that you carry on from being part of the team?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, yes, I agree with the part that, yes, you're always being told what is wrong. I know I brought my dad up a lot, but he was a huge part of my ski racing. He was very positive all the time. And I think that, you know, he wanted me to do well because he was very involved in ski racing, but he never told me, you know, what I needed to do or what, like, he would give feedback, but it was always very positive.
Right.
And when I was hard on myself, it was always like, you know what, did your best, move forward. And, there's always the next race, you know. And I think that as a coach, I try to incorporate, you know, we get so stuck on, well, we didn't do this well, let's work on this. I think it's hard sometimes to be like, okay, like, this is what you did well, and then here's what we can improve on. So I think trying to find that balance, I totally agree that I think we get a lot of time, well, this wasn't as good. And then we're so hard on ourselves. I think everybody's so hard on themselves, you know, and it's never good enough. And we need to be okay with being where we're at. And I think that's a constant struggle for a lot of people. I do that all the time. And so I try to put it in perspective, you know, working in the emergency department, it's similar. There's a lot of stress. And so I think just trying to figure out that balance of, you know, does this matter right now? Is this going to matter in 5 years? What's important right now? And so, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen that.
I don't know if that answered anything.
No. Yeah. Yeah, it did. But I totally noticed that with individual, more so with individual sports where athletes tend to be very hard on themselves because they're in their mind, I feel, and I was guilty of this myself, you know, in the sport that I participated in, that like in my mind,
what sport did you?
I was a diver.
Oh, okay.
You know, 10 meter platform and all that stuff. Yeah,
it That's was intense.
Yeah. I actually, yeah, it was something that I started like as a summer camp. My mom needed something for me to do during the summer. So she stuck me in this diving summer camp that the University of Miami had for kids. And I just liked it so much that I just stuck with it and did it through college, really.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so it's one of the reasons why I like, you know, the ski team and all that, because there's a lot of the same language that you hear with the ski team that I heard growing up as, you know, being a diver. Like a lot of, you know, there's Junior Olympics mm-hmm. and like the age group categories and all that stuff. There's a lot of similarities in terms of, obviously the sport itself is different, but the way like the structure of the organization is and kind of how meets take place and the zoning of meets and that sort of thing. A lot of similarities right. that I could relate to. But coming back to the individual sport aspect and being hard on yourself, at least for me, it was in my mind, I always had this perception of perfection that I was always trying to achieve. And then those moments that where I felt I didn't achieve them, which were actually small in comparison to the successes, but just those small not reaching that ideal that I had in my mind, just, you know, yeah, it kind of wrecks you as mentally as a person, like, you know, and you carry it. It's like baggage that you carry, right? Until somebody says, "Hey, snap out of it." You know, you're still doing great.
Yeah,
you know, totally. Just don't focus on that one bad moment. You know, there's going to be other. You have to shake that off and basically start thinking about your next dive. You know, kind of thing. So yeah, I could totally relate to, you know, the athletes, and I see it more so with individual sport athletes than with team-oriented athletes?
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, that's interesting that you say that, because I think that I agree with that aspect that, you know, ski racing, obviously you have your team, but it is very individualized in that same aspect as in, you know, diving as well. And there's a lot of similarities there. And I think that, you know, when you don't do as well, you really take it out on yourself personally versus when you're on a team, you still do, I think, on yourself, but at the same time, you're like, it's not as individualized as, you know, so I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, did you find that when you were competing that you would have a moment that you just couldn't shake off to the extent that it was counterproductive to your next run, right? You know, it was consuming your thoughts too much that you couldn't focus on the next thing?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that we get stuck in that headspace, you know, the negative of it's hard to sometimes get out of that spot. And so I think then, like you said, it goes over to the next run. And so there's got to be that, you know, reset. And I think some people do it better than others.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you know, you can't really move forward.
Davis strikes me as the type of person that has that gene that it could shake it off with his laid backness.
He's waiting. We are very opposite. We're very good friends, but we're very opposite.
Yeah. So now you're on.
The boys.
So now you're on, you mentioned you're on your 11th season coaching. So clearly you have.
Yeah, I think this is my, I took a year off for nursing school when I went back to school. So this is, I think, 11 seasons coaching with the team.
Okay. So clearly, you know, you have a passion for it. What aspects of coaching do you enjoy the most?
Oh gosh. I just love being up on the mountain with the kids. I mean, you get to ski, you know, as a job, I get to ski with kids. I think that, you know, you really can't beat that. So I think that just being up there and, you know, being around the kids and then the other coaches and just, it's all really a positive environment. And so it's just a lot of fun.
Now, can you pinpoint like one aspect of it that really raises the stoke level where when you see it, you're like, yeah, this is why I enjoy doing it?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. You know, I think that the races are super fun. Southern Series is a great series. We have a lot of, you know, good relationships with New Mexico and, you know, Southern Colorado. And I think the kids have a really good, it's just a good thing going on. It's just a, you know, fun atmosphere, but also competitive. And, you know, I think that's really awesome. I always enjoy the Southern Series races. Obviously when we get snow and we get to go powder skiing, that's super fun. And so fun to see the kids. That's the thing. I think that ski racing, you learn all the techniques in ski racing. And then I don't think the kids recognize yet, but once you bring it into free skiing, it's just there. Like, you just have that. And I think that, you know, it's fun when we all ski together and as coaches, and we're like, you know, you can tell which people have raced. And I think that's really cool because, you know, the kids are going to have that with them for the rest of, you know, their lives. And skiing is something you can do for a long time. And so I think that's really awesome to have that. But yeah, I think we just have a lot of fun up there. Really, now, it's a good time.
Is there any aspect of coaching that kills the stoke level? Like when you see it, you're like, oh yeah, this is what I don't like about it.
No, I don't think there's anything that I really, really dislike. I think the time thing, I have a hard time because I do work full time at the hospital. And then I think that sometimes it's hard to, you know, I don't have a ton of, it's not that it's a bad thing. I just think that it's hard to balance both jobs at the same time. And I think that's a problem we have in Flagstaff, is everybody is working two jobs. And so I think that makes it a little challenging, but everyone does it because they want to do it. And that's why we keep coming back. You know, it's not because it's, obviously we're not doing it because we want to make a ton of money doing it, but I think it's just, it brings the coaches back, which says a lot about skiing and our team, is that everybody's still working two jobs, but they still want to coach. And so that's really awesome.
Yeah. That kind of speaks to the passion of all the coaches and really everybody that's involved with the team, whether you're a coach or not. It definitely speaks to the love of the game kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's a big race this weekend. What expectations do you as a coach have, if any?
It's gonna be the USSA Southern Series slalom race, which is always a lot of fun. It's gonna be on Agassiz. You know, I think that I'm pretty sure Purgatory is New Mexico, I don't think, is coming just because of COVID. They haven't been able to really, I think it's kind of shut down in New Mexico, so unfortunately they won't be coming. But Purgatory's got a great team, and you know, the kids are excited, and I think it will be. We've been training slalom the last couple of weeks, so we're ready, and think it's going to be a good race and a lot of fun. And I think it's supposed to be pretty warm this weekend, so that will be nice for the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always fun when the sun's out and it's warm.
Yeah. I think I'm going to be doing some gatekeeping. So I think it's going to be downright hot for me.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I know. And it's fun because we always take that. It's always a little bit easier when it's warmer.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be, for me, it's going to be hot because I'm just going to be standing under the sun in like reflective white stuff all around me. So
yeah. You have to wear your sunscreen and sunglasses, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, wear a tank top or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, exactly. You can get a tan. You can do multitask there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I need to work on my tan, by the way. So that'll be good. Maybe I'll bring my speedo from my diving days. Who knows? We'll see.
Perfect. Perfect.
I think it'll be a little awkward, me in speedos and ski boots. But
yeah, I don't know. Would your son be okay with that, or would he be? Yeah.
I think he'd be on board with it and be like, "Where's my speedo?"
Exactly. My brothers probably would be too. So.
So now during the season, now you mentioned, you know, your other job, you work at the hospital and all that, but when you're not or working, how are you killing time during the season?
Oh yeah. There's always so much to do here in Flagstaff. I mentioned we do a lot of water sports going up to the lake. My husband's a big hunter. I'm trying to get more involved, not quite there yet, but, so just a lot of outdoors things, spending time with our family. We have a huge, you know, family and friends, and it's a lot of fun. Just, my mom always has a million people at her house, and so we always find something to do. So yeah, it's good.
How much into hunting have you gotten into?
Oh gosh. Well, my husband and I have been together 10 years, so I should be more involved than I am, but he's really, really big into hunting, but I like shed hunting, going out and looking for antlers. That's kind of what I'll do, but I haven't quite gotten into the, I haven't actually killed an animal myself, so not there yet, but it, you know, maybe. I didn't grow up doing it like he did, so it's a new thing for me.
Yeah, no, it's same with me. It's not something that my family did growing up. I mean, there's not much hunting you could do in Miami, to be quite honest.
Right.
Yeah. unless you go like spear fishing or something like that, then.
Oh yeah. That, fishing is awesome.
Yeah. That was growing
did
up.
You fishing?
What's that?
Were you into fishing or no?
So my dad and I, we did a lot of spear fishing growing up.
Oh, cool.
You know, we would go out into open water and, you know, free dive and that sort of thing. And not very deep water, like, you know, maybe the deepest we would get would probably be like 30 feet or something like that, 30, 40 feet. You know, just enough to get to the bottom, poke around some reef, and then, you know, come back up and that sort of thing. But yeah, now that I'm living here in Flagstaff, though, I'm flirting with the idea of getting into hunting. I've put in for elk tags and that sort of thing, but didn't get picked.
Okay.
But yeah, I have a few neighbors that, you know, they're giving me pointers, you know, what to do and that sort of thing. So
yeah, if you ever want some pointers, Colton would be happy to talk to you.
Yeah. That's one thing.
Lives and breathes hunting, so.
Yeah. That's one thing I've noticed about, like, with my neighbors and stuff that are avid hunters. They're like so willing to share.
Yeah.
Information and that sort of thing. Like, it's not something that, you know, they keep to themselves because they,
right,
you know, they don't want more people involved and that sort of, they're very forthcoming. So it's a pretty cool community.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, cool. Yeah. If you ever want any pointers, if he would be happy to share.
Right on. So now fast forward, it's June, July. What are you doing with your leisure time? Are you doing the water skiing thing like Davis and Liz and all them?
Or? Yeah, we go out in the evenings for sure. In the summer, that's a lot of fun, water skiing. They put the water ski course up actually this summer. And I didn't actually get out there to do the course, but you know, I think it's fun because it's kind of similar to ski racing as far as going around buoys, and they have a lot of fun out there. But yeah, water skiing, and spend a lot of time out camping, and we have a ranch that we go out and spend a lot of time in the summer, so that's a lot of fun. So there's always stuff to do.
Any mountain biking in there at all?
You know, I am not a great mountain biker. My really good girlfriend, Alex, she is, she does the enduro downhill mountain biking. And, when we first started, mountain biking, I would go out with her, but it's kind of funny. I'm not at any of most of my friends' levels on mountain biking. Elizabeth, she and I will ride together sometimes, but I'm not great. I can't say I'm good at it. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it is fun. I definitely want to get more into it, but I haven't yet. Do you mountain bike?
I do. And I got my son's first mountain bike this last summer.
How fun.
So now it's become a dad and lad activity, just like skiing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, and don't tell him, but a big box arrived the other day with his upgrade, that he's very curious about the big box in the garage, and I'm trying to keep it a surprise. I'm not sure how much longer that's gonna stay, especially now that I'm talking about it.
I won't say anything. Yeah.
I'll just make sure he doesn't listen to this episode, because then, yeah, he's gonna be like, so what is in that box?
I know your secret.
Yeah. But yeah, he's actually gotten really good. I mean, he's towards the end of the season, he was already coming down Schultz and doing some pretty big single track trails.
And wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He's quite the adventurous little one, which I think I have myself to blame for that.
Yeah, he's going to be beating you before you know it.
Oh, no. His skiing now, like, I get nervous when he says things like, hey, follow me, Dad. And I'm like, I don't know. What kind of trouble are we going to get into if
That's
I follow
so you? Awesome. Yeah, my parents always said that. They were like, you know, we loved it when you guys were beating us. It means we, you know, we did our job.
Yeah, he's definitely, by the time he's 8, he's gonna be skiing backwards and out skiing me at the same time.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. But again, it was all my doing, so I really I can't complain.
Exactly.
All right, so we're gonna enter the portion of the podcast where I ask you a few questions just to see what makes Charlie tick. What, you know, we're going to crawl inside your brain a little bit. Okay. So favorite food.
Oh, that's easy. Mexican food. Definitely La Fonda. My whole family cannot stand how much I love La Fonda.
So. Now, what specifically of Mexican food do you enjoy the most? Like enchiladas?
Well, La Fonda has a number 20. What? Oh, I definitely like the just tacos and enchiladas. That's my.
That's your go-to?
Yeah.
All right. Can't go wrong with that. Cake or pie?
Oh, cake.
Okay. That's wrong, but okay.
No, red velvet cake is way better than pie.
Okay, I will tolerate red velvet cake. If it has the cream cheese frosting.
Okay. Yeah. See, my cousin's a pastry chef and she lives here. So she makes a lot of amazing cake. So
very good.
She doesn't really do pie. So maybe she should. Yeah. I don't know. She does do some pies, I guess, but mostly cake.
And I'll accept carrot cake.
Okay. Well. Okay. Yeah. I like carrot cake. That's good.
But that's as far as I go. Okay. you're going to leave me behind. What? After red velvet cake. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Mint chocolate chip.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that one, especially on a hot day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
the best.
For some reason, mint chocolate chip seems colder during the summer.
Yeah, I know. And everyone else likes vanilla, and I don't understand.
It vanilla has its place. Okay. Don't dismiss it.
Yeah. Elizabeth and Davis, Davis doesn't like chocolate, so that's the problem.
See, now if you were into pies, you would definitely be into vanilla.
Okay. Yeah.
There's nothing like vanilla over.
That's true, because you have to have vanilla with your pie. Okay. Fair. Yeah.
Especially over a piping hot apple pie.
That sounds really good, actually.
Yeah. Who would play you in the story of your life? So actor, actress, that kind of thing.
Oh, gosh. Who would I want to play me? Sandra Bullock, for sure. Yeah. She's in all my favorite movies. So I love The Blind Side. She's The Proposal, all those movies. She's amazing. So, yeah.
Right on. If you wrote a book, what would you title it? And it can't be The Blum Book.
Dang it.
That's already taken.
Oh, gosh. We already have that one.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would probably have to. I am very, very passionate about social media. And I can't believe I didn't even bring this up earlier when we were talking about the kids with social media, because I have a really hard time deciding if I like it or if I don't like it. And so I feel like I would write a book on how to live a life without social media.
Ooh.
Just because I feel like we are, I don't know, I think social media can be really good, but I think that we have become so all consumed in social media. And that's another reason I love ski racing, is the kids can be up on the mountain and they don't have their phones on all the time. And it's, we just, we're a society that's always connected, and it's great, but I think it makes things complicated sometimes. So I go back and forth between deleting my social media every other month. So I need a book on how to guide me on how to just not have it at all.
All right. So get to writing. I look forward to reading that book. Have you, along those lines, have you seen that Netflix documentary,
yes,
Social Dilemma?
Yes. Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely. And it's so, kind of speaking to, a little bit the elephant in the room kind of thing with the whole COVID thing. That's one of the things as a parent that hurt me the most was, my wife and I, we did a really good job of limiting screen time, mm-hmm, with our son. And, you speak to pediatricians and, child psychologists and that sort of thing. And they say the same thing. It's like, yeah, limit screen time, no screen time, or very little screen time. And then COVID hits, and what do? We double down on screen time. It was it was one of the heartbreaking things of the whole kind of COVID experience.
Well, yeah, I imagine. I can't even imagine having kids right now and trying to figure out that balance. Cause like you said, it's really hard to, It's a weird time for sure. And I think that it will be interesting to see, but social media is so new, and I just think it will be, looking back, it will be interesting to see.
Yeah. It's one of those things where we won't know what the unintended consequences are until we're deep into the problem, right? It's going to be totally something like that. Just because it's so new, we're still, the whole social media thing, it's still kind of, yes, it's been around for whatever, 8 years, 9 years by now, but it's still kind of, nobody knows what to do with it.
Correct. Yep. So we need a book.
we need some guidelines or something, yeah, or, they have books for child rearing. Why don't they have books for
navigating? Well, it's time to come, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. First life-changing moment.
Ooh, first life-changing moment. I don't know, first life-changing moment. I think the biggest life-changing moment for me in my life so far, and sorry, this gets a little little sad, but was my dad when he passed away. That has been a huge life moment for me. And so I think that that hopefully will be the hardest moment of my life. But, you know, life continues on and it's still good. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I would say that was the biggest life change for me.
Did it feel as though the safety net was pulled out in a way?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, my dad and I were really, really close. And so I think that my whole family, but ski racing was hard, or coaching was hard for me for a long time, because that was what I associated with skiing, was my dad. And so it was kind of, this is a funny story. This is a good story. Beamer and I were up on the mountain the other day testing the timing, and he was having me plug it in up at the top. And I had this little plug that he has you plug in to test the timing. And he, after he's done, he goes, "Do you recognize that, Charlie?" And I said, "No." He goes, "Oh, well, your dad made that." And he goes, "He's still here with us and he's still helping us out." And that was really cool. So him and Brett Beamer were really close. And I think it's just really cool to see that he's still, you know, there's still his presence in skiing. And that's a huge part of why I'm still there is, you know, I love it. And he was a huge part of it. And I want to keep being a part of that. So that's cool.
Keep that legacy going.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do aliens exist?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, that question, so far that question is batting 500. Not a single person has said no to that. So,
yep, I would say for sure.
So we're all optimistic that eventually a spaceship is going to show up in downtown LA.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to come here. I don't know if they really want to be part of this right now.
Yeah, let's not go. Let's go. Let's vacation somewhere else this time.
Oh, I'm so good down there.
Yeah. I hear Jupiter is good this time of year.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Okay, last one. You are in a cabin and it's pitch black. You have one match. Which do you light first? The newspaper, the lamp, the candle, or the fire?
Ooh, the newspaper.
No, you light the match first.
Oh. I was going to say, I was thought this was like a trick question.
It was.
You have to like light the newspaper to light the fire. That's a good one.
Well, cool. Thanks for doing this. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad that you were able to make it. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. That was a lot of fun. So we'll see you on the mountain.
Yeah, for sure. We'll be there this weekend, all weekend.
Cool. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, that's all for this week. Special thanks to my guest, Charlie. Don't forget to look for us on Apple Podcasts and hit that subscribe button. If you shop on Amazon and you'd like to support the show, please visit our website at www.steepangle.com. That's STEEPANGLE.com. Click through the Amazon banner on our homepage, bookmark the link for future use, and continue on with your Amazon shopping. It's a way for you to support the show without sending us a dime. Until next time, bye for now.